If you have never experienced short track speed skating, allow us to set the scene.
Bradbury, closest to the fence, fifth position for the start. Away they go. Stephen Bradbury was content in his semi to sit at the back, and it looks like he'll do that again just here.
Picture the intensity of a velodrome, but transferred onto a sheet of ice. Imagine the explosive pace of a sprint, but again, on ice. The race structure is reminiscent of a tactical 800 metres in athletics, yet it unfolds at breakneck speed. Did we mention that all of this takes place on ice? The sport is notorious for its unpredictability, with slips, trips and falls being a constant threat. Complicating matters further, every competitor is racing around with razor-sharp blades strapped to their feet. Each lap becomes a whirlwind of chaos, sheer bedlam from start to finish. It's a discipline that defies control and just cannot be tamed. Success in short track speed skating is a precarious balance between raw speed and sheer luck. To claim victory, an athlete must not only be exceptionally fast, but also navigate fierce jostling for position, summon the courage for bold overtakes, and endure the ever-present risk of crashing out. This is the Winter Olympic Series, and this is the Sporting Almanac podcast. But before we begin, let us tell you this event's biggest open secret. The favourite is never guaranteed to win. The halfway point of the Winter Olympic Series.
Well, the end of this episode will be the halfway point.
The start.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves,
Ben. The start of the halfway point. And as we alluded to on the last episode, my favourite Winter Olympic story.
The best things you can see on YouTube. If you want to go on YouTube and entertain yourselves and you aren't aware of this, listen to this episode, take it in, and then go and watch it. It's so brilliant.
Show notes.
Especially when you know the context behind it. Wonderful stuff. Beautiful sporting moment.
It's all about short track speed skating. And I'd hazard a guess that unless you've come to listen to this episode because you're a short track speed skating enthusiast, most people who listen to it will know absolutely nothing about the sport. So briefly, should we try and explain it?
It's basically a sprint on ice. That's the briefest way I can explain it.
Yeah, round in circles.
Super high speed, round in circles. It is a 111-meter track is a short track, which is, coincidentally or not, the same size as a hockey rink.
Mm-hmm.
And that's done over 500 meters, 1 kilometer, 1,500 meters, 5,000 meters, 10,000 meters, plus team pursuits as well. Women do 3,000 and 5,000 meters instead of 5K and 10K for some reason.
Yeah.
Long track speed skating is a 400-meter track.
It's basically, as you say, imagine 400-meter running, but at the speed of sprinting on ice skates.
Yeah, it's very dangerous. Obviously, it's very high speed. It's very dangerous. Short track speed skating particularly is known for frequent crashes because, as I'm sure you can imagine, given it's basically done in a hockey rink, the turns are super tight. And because it's done over such short distances, the speeds are super high as well. Often over 45 kilometers an hour. So they wear helmets, they have cut resistant suits on, and padded barriers are a must at every single level, certainly at elite level, the speeds they go at.
As will become apparent. Yeah, like they jostle for position a lot as well. Like, I guess the thing to point out is if you know, you'll obviously see this if you watch it, but they sort of, everyone swings into the apexes of the corners. So obviously it's straight sprint, big turns at the end, and obviously the inside line is favorable because it's the shortest distance, so everyone's trying to get there, and so people often go out quite wide to carry their momentum and swing into the apex. I think there's like
is this five or six in a heat?
Five, I think.
Yeah, so it's pretty busy.
Based on the very limited amount of this sport I've watched, which is largely this particular clip over and over again.
Well, that's the final that you've watched over and over again.
Ah, fair enough.
But I think you're still right. I think it probably is five, because I'm not sure you could fit many more people on the track. But yeah, it's pretty involved and chaotic. And yeah, like basically, crashes are normal and
yeah,
quite often decide the outcomes of races.
It's one of those things similar to, you think about Monaco Grand Prix of old, where sometimes simply finishing is enough to get yourself on a podium, get yourself a medal in this case. Sometimes if you stay on your feet and don't fall over, it can be enough to get yourself a medal. And we may or may not have a story.
We do.
To that effect.
We do have a story.
Related to the sport.
The story of Steve Bradbury.
I love this story so much.
Our Australian brothers and sisters will know of this man. He's a bit of a cult legend down under.
For good reason, yeah.
Yeah. But like, the story itself is insane. I'm genuinely intrigued. I would be really intrigued to know if people know of his story generally. I'm sure Winter Olympic fans, like proper enthusiasts, are. But I don't know if he's sort of infiltrated, you know, mainstream culture, like sporting culture.
I was very aware of the moment, obviously. In fact, I remember the moment from when it happened. God, nearly 25 years ago now. But I didn't know anything about him. I barely even knew what he looked like without his helmet on, which was a surprise enough when I saw the podium and stuff like that. I didn't know anything about his background, his story. And it's one of those stories that the more you know about it and the more you know about him and his life, and
the better it gets.
Before and after, the better it gets.
Yeah.
The better it gets. So the context is so important in what is an incredible sporting moment, an incredible Olympic moment that sums up the Olympics perfectly.
Yeah.
But then you learn the story more and it's just... it's perfect.
It is.
But let's tell it.
He's probably in every single montage. People have probably seen it by accident, but not realized that they'd seen
absolutely.
It.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, yeah, let's tell it. So Steve, there's a little bit of background to his career, I guess. He was a 1991 world champion in the relay over 5,000 meters. He'd also won a couple of relay silvers and bronzes, and a 1994 Olympic relay bronze medal over the same distance. But you'll have noticed, crucially, he didn't have any major international individual titles. You know, his reputation, and I may be doing the man a disservice here, but I think he was renowned for being, you know, at its best, a bit unlucky, but...
a nearly man.
Yeah, a nearly man. That's a good way of putting it, actually. Some critics, maybe less kind, would label him reckless, but...
I mean, how can you not be reckless? Surely that's just trying to be fast.
I agree, yeah. So I feel like that is unkind, so... yeah, nearly man is, as you've quite rightly summarised, is more apt, I think. But he has a long history and a long relationship with the Olympic Games. 1992, he wasn't selected in the individual events, so he didn't get to compete for an individual title. And then in 1994, in Lillehammer, he entered in the 500 metres and the 1,000 metres and was the favourite going into the latter. And in the 500, he made the semis, but was knocked over by a rival, limped home fourth in a time of 1 minute, 3 seconds, 0.51, for those who are interested in the specifics.
Which is me.
And he was eliminated, as you might imagine, because fourth isn't good enough to get through. And then in the 1,000 metres where, you know, as we were saying, he was the favourite, he was knocked over in the heats and again eliminated. So two crashes effectively costing him. The irony, Jack. The irony. Sports. But yeah, 1994, we can leave that behind us. But poor Steve, as we said, unlucky, and he suffered a near career-ending injury in a World Cup event in Montreal.
That's not nearly man behaviour, that's just pure bad luck, this one.
Yeah, rank luck. Do you want...
very unpleasant, I don't want to think about this too long and hard.
Oh, okay. But do you want me to tell it then, like very swiftly?
Please do, yeah.
So
I'll cover my ears.
A skater's blade sliced through his right thigh after a collision, and it cut through to the other side. And as you might imagine, that caused quite a significant loss of blood. In fact, 4 litres, to be precise. His heart rate, because he was obviously losing so much blood, spiked at 200 beats per minute, they say. The legend says.
And he'd just been racing as well, so his heart was up because of that.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
And that meant, obviously, like, blood was just pumping out of him really quickly. All four of his quadricep muscles had been sliced through and thought, and he basically, I think he's on record as having said, like, if I had lost consciousness, I think I might have died.
Mm.
And he required 111 stitches and he couldn't move his leg for 3 weeks. He needed 18 months before he was back to full strength. So goes to Lillehammer, crashes out, and then has another accident in Montreal in the same year where he nearly dies. So you're thinking, ah, you know, it would be a pretty good story if he got back to the next game's full stop. Well, he did. He went to Nagano.
He did. Yeah. Nagano in Japan.
In 1998.
Yeah. Medal contender again in the individual events. But again, bad luck following him everywhere. He was impeded in a couple of collisions with a race, both the 500 and the 1,000 meters, and didn't even get through the heat. So again, pressure on him, expectations on him, even after his injury, getting himself back and then being stalked by bad luck once again. But it doesn't get any better from there.
Yeah. Did the luck turn, Jack?
Did not. A couple of years later, so this is halfway through the next Olympic cycle, September 2000, he broke his neck in a training accident. Another skater fell in front of him. He tried to jump over him, but he clipped in, and at the speed he was going, went headfirst into the barriers. He fractured his C4 and C5 vertebrae, spent a month and a half in a halo brace, needed 4 pins to be inserted into his skull, and screws and plates bolted into his back and chest. Docs told him he wouldn't be able to race again. That was the end of his career. But he was determined. He was nothing if not determined.
He was a trier, Steve.
So he wanted to reach the Olympics. He wanted redemption. I mean, after crashing out of the last 2 Olympics, but even before the event, in interviews, he conceded that he would be way past his best in terms of challenging medals. In fact, he would have been way past his best anyway, because speed skating is very much a young man's game.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
By this point, he was in his late 20s. I think he was 28, 29, something like that.
Yeah, late 20s, I think. Yeah.
Which might not sound so old to us, but in terms of speed skating, that is arguably over the hill anyway.
Yeah, twilight years.
Yeah, peak performance tends to be early 20s in that particular sport. So, the Salt Lake City, 2002 Winter Olympics.
Salt Lake City. Yeah, I mean, it's probably worth mentioning, isn't it, before we actually get to the racing at Salt Lake City, that he needed to borrow $1,000 from his parents to fix an old car to even get to training. He got by making skating boots in his backyard and selling them out of a workshop. It was basically that, combined with the injury, combined with the bad luck, combined with the age, just makes, like you said, getting to the Olympics was enough. It would have been enough. But
we say it all, we've said it, well, you particularly have said it throughout these episodes, that you don't have to win an Olympic gold to be a memorable Olympian, to be a hero at the Olympics. And just by turning up, just by fighting back, just by getting through, he was already a hero.
Yeah.
That being said, Ben, what happened next?
Well, the heats get going, and a pretty uneventful for Steve, actually. Just wins his
by
heat.
By his standards.
Yeah, yeah, wins, just progresses. Yeah, nice. We're in the quarterfinals, no problem. But we have a look at the draw in the quarterfinals, and we see that we're up against the favourite and the defending world champion, and the only top two progress. So, you know, finish third, and you're out. And Steve finished third and he's out.
Heartbreak.
Happy to achieve, you know, what we said. Get to the Olympics, final appearance. Except, absolute drama. The world champ gets DQ'd and Steve's back in. One final hurrah. Semi-finals. So
obviously,
yeah,
this is elite competition by this point. He knew he didn't have the pace to win it. He was the second oldest, second oldest racer at the Games. He decided the best thing to do was to hang back, allow the faster favourites to complete, and just hope for an incident near the front, and maybe he'd make it into the top two and get himself into the final. And that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Top three crashed out. He won the heat. He made it through to the final. Unbelievable stuff. This guy has been through ups and downs like you could never believe. Downs and downs, I should say, like you can never believe. And now he stands in an Olympic final as the underdog by a country mile.
By a mile. But, Jack, if it's not broke,
don't fix it.
Except on this occasion, it was by design, but it also wasn't, because he was a massive underdog and just simply not fast enough to go with the guys in the final. And with 50 meters to go, he was 15 meters off the pace. and the top three were just desperately jostling for position, obviously all going for gold. And go on, Jack, tell us the inevitable. What happens at the front in short track speed skating when people are fighting for position, when they're leaving everything on the line, when they're going desperately fast? What happens?
One mistake can cause a ripple that changes the future of sport entirely, because going into the last corner, three of the finalists jostling for position at the front, desperately trying to get medals. One of them slips on the ice. They take the other two out. The fourth coming in behind, they get taken out by the pile as well. And the only person left on their skates to skate across the line all by himself with his arms in the air and a look of utter shock on his face is like Stephen stunned. Bradbury.
It's beautiful. He is like genuinely like bamboozled. He cannot believe it. It is like, it is the most beautiful thing. And to add to like the intensity and the drama, like there was then obviously a judge's review, which resulted in a delay before they confirmed the positions, because you can order a re-race effectively if there's like foul play or something. I don't fully understand the rules, but there are circumstances where they can void it effectively and re-race. But the judges decided to uphold it. And yeah, Steve Bradbury is the Olympic champion.
It's just
the gold medal, his only major individual title, and the first athlete from Australia and the first from the Southern Hemisphere to win an Olympic gold medal.
It's incredible. I mean, the image of him in his green suit with his yellow helmet, proper Aussie green and gold, and I'll call it green and gold on this occasion.
Canary yellow.
Not canary yellow. it's iconic, with a look of shock on his face. And yeah, see him standing on the podium with his hair turning out to be almost exactly the same color as his helmet as well. Bright yellow hair.
Yeah.
Such was the fashion in the early 2000s. it's iconic.
Yeah.
It's historic.
I think he said about himself, didn't he? Like, obviously I wasn't the fastest skater. I don't think I'll take a medal as the minute and a half of the oh, what am I saying here? This is an actual quote from him as well, and I can't even read it. You say it.
Obviously I wasn't the fastest skater. I don't think I'll take the medal as a minute and a half of the race I actually won. I'll take it as the last decade of hard slog I put in.
Yeah, beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
Which is, I actually think that's just really weirdly poetic, because it is true.
It's the Olympics.
Yeah, it's what it's about.
And such an Olympic attitude. If you're going to nail it down to a single moment or a single quote in this instance regarding a single moment, that's what the Olympics is all about. If they hadn't slipped near the line and he'd come fifth in that, he'd probably look back the same, like, this is a career I've put my heart and soul into. Might not have come out of it with what I want, but I'm still bloody proud of it. But then that wonderful Olympic moment where fate rewards you with what you have deserved for the effort you put in. Can't do it to everyone, but it's special.
Yeah, that's it. You can't do it to everyone, but it does happen to someone. And, you know, like when we were just talking about like football, and I was saying about the Eze transfer to Arsenal, and I was like, objectively, I know I'm biased, but objectively, if you love sport, you should be really pleased that it happened to someone. Like, that's a boy growing up and playing for his boyhood club, the team that he supported all his life, and then having been rejected from them, blah blah blah. We told the story before, but this Steve Bradbury story is like that. It's like, I don't care if you're Australian or if you're American or if you're British or if you're from anywhere else in the world. Like, you should be absolutely jacked for this guy, because it happened to someone. You know, like, it's a dream coming true in fairy tale circumstances. And if you don't like sport when it throws up those moments, then like, what are you doing here?
Exactly. It sends a shiver down my spine. Like, I can't watch that clip without just smiling like a goon, honestly. And the more I've learned about his story, the more I've learned about the man, the more I smile. I mean, it's iconic in Australia. I mean, the phrase doing a Bradbury is in the Australian lexicon.
Yeah.
The idea of, you know, winning through other people's misfortune and deserving it at the same time is wonderful. Do you know, that was the first time in Olympic history that four out of the five finalists, or all the other finalists but one, had fallen in a final. Nice. First and only time it's ever happened.
The stars.
And it happened to him.
Have
at
to
that
align.
Moment, yeah,
yeah. yeah. But did his heroics end there, Jack?
No, I mean, after he retired, he became a motivational speaker, first of all, obviously focusing on resilience, long-term effort, staying in the race,
yeah.
even when not the favourite. I mean, talk about setting yourself up for a future career there. Put it this way, Australia have never won another gold medal in short track speed skating. It's obviously one of the nation's most, arguably the most iconic Winter Olympic moment.
Mm.
But there's been recent news regarding him as well, just a few years ago. So he was at the beach, as you do in Australia, and there was four teenage girls who'd been swept out to sea by a strong rip current at King's Beach in Queensland's Sunshine Coast. He used a rescue board to reach them, and he helped bring them safely back to shore all by himself. They were all between 14 and 17 years old, were struggling to stay afloat after being dragged beyond the breakers. One had already swallowed water and was close to exhaustion when Bradbury reached her.
Whoa.
Bradbury said he recognised the danger signs of a rip current immediately, and he knew the situation was serious because the girls were panicking and drifting further offshore. Understandably, he was awarded a commendation for brave conduct by the Australian Honours and Awards System for the rescue, recognising his, and I quote, selfless and courageous actions in hazardous situations. Bradbury, being a bloody hero, has downplayed his heroism,
yeah.
saying his Olympic experience helped him stay calm under pressure and focus on problem solving in dangerous situations. But I mean,
yeah,
the guy has got a hell of a good public image in Australia for obvious reasons, for sport and for life. I mean, what a guy. What a story.
I want to know if he's... I didn't actually look this up, and I should have, and I would be intrigued to know if he has an autobiography. But given his life's taken so many twists and turns, if he hasn't got one, he should probably just wait another decade and complete the series in a single book, because it will be...
Work in progress, yeah.
It would be, like, I mean, if there is already a book, it will be stacked full of great stories for the reasons discussed. But if there isn't
one... He does have an autobiography. It was published in 2005, so probably needs an update.
Ah, needs an update.
Given the way his life's gone, so. But it's a good name. It's called Last Man Standing.
Nice. Very good. Very apt. Well, Steve Bradbury, a hero on and off the ice. Hopefully, as we always say, we have encouraged a few people to tune in to the short track speed skating when it gets going at the Olympics.
Absolutely. Ah, God. I love the story.
It's so good.
The more you learn about him, the more that moment sends that shiver down your spine.
Yeah. And we're staying with the underdog on the next episode as well.
Of course we are. It's the Olympics, man.
Yeah, the underdog theme is going to continue because we love it, as you have just quite rightly been saying. But we're going to transition to ski jumping. And if you know anything about the Winter Olympics, if you're British and you know anything about the Winter Olympics, this man is synonymous with it. There's only one guy you can talk about when it comes to ski jumping in Great Britain. And he soars.
Quite literally, yeah.
He soars like an eagle.
Soars like an eagle.
Right. See you on the next one.
I'll see you on the next one. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for our Winter Olympics series. If you enjoyed what you've heard, please tell a friend about it. We'll be covering everything from speed skating to snowboarding, from ice hockey to figure skating, and much more. There really is something for everyone. Once you've done that, please give us a like, a subscribe, a share or a comment, and tune in for the rest of the series or for one of our 40-odd other episodes on the sporting world as well. Our theme tune is Oh Yeah by Harmonia Productions. You can find us on Blue Sky and Instagram at The Sporting Almanac. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the games as much as we certainly will. From both of us, goodbye for now.